Playwright David Hare has written scripts for stage, including Plenty and most recently The Power of Yes, television, such as Licking Hitler, and movies, The Hours and The Reader. But he's so far been represented on radio only by adaptations of his theatre pieces. This weekend, though, Radio 4 broadcasts a previously unperformed play, which grew out of an abandoned movie script. Murder in Samarkand is based on the memoirs of Craig Murray, who was removed in 2004 as British ambassador to Uzbekistan after publicly protesting that the British and American governments were using intelligence secured by torturing prisoners.
How do you survive?
Like everyone else, by not doing too well.
What they told me, they said yes, the regime used to be nasty, but then they said, with American investment, the country's transforming itself into a Southeast Asia-style entrepreneurial economy.
And you believe them?
David Tennant as Ambassador Murray in a scene from Murder in Samarkand, written by David Hare. A majority of movie scripts fail to get made, but for different reasons. So why had this film finished up as a radio play?
I wrote it for Michael Winterbottom, and he and I did not see eye to eye. He, when he read the book, thought that it was a farce, and he imagined it with a comedian like Steve Coogan. And I saw it as rather more serious, so we were artistically at odds. But also, I don't think people outside the film industry understand the degree to which drama really is disappearing from the English-speaking cinema. It's been a sort of perfect storm that at the exact moment that the studios lost their faith in what you might call human being-based drama, at that exact moment the recession came along, and now the success of Avatar is just confirming them in their judgment that that kind of film is finished. And I don't think anyone yet knows. There'll be a lagging couple of years before you realise there aren't any human beings on the screens at your local Odeon anymore.
Even if you had agreed with Michael Winterbottom, it would have been a hard film to get funding for, I suspect, wouldn't it? Because of the theme of it, that it explicitly attacks the British and American governments over torture in particular, in effect, over the whole foreign policy. So it might have been hard to attract finance.
I don't know. I mean, it is a very funny story. I mean, it's about this man, Craig Murray, who was our ambassador in Uzbekistan, and who is, by his own admission, a somewhat flawed character, meaning his private life was completely chaotic. His way of conducting business was extremely unusual. He wasn't your representative ambassador. And he was also a great high flyer. He didn't go into Uzbekistan, and he didn't go into the effects of the war on terror intending to come apart from his government or from the Foreign Office. He simply regards himself as a classic liberal, and his government has changed beyond recognition.
In the narration in the radio play, he says, let's get this out of the way, usual rules, it's basically true, but some names have been changed. But it is essentially, it's based on his memoir.
It is, and the thing I did was take out any accusation that he makes in the memoir that can't be corroborated. I only make those allegations which we know to be true and which are corroborated by other people. That's to say, Craig Murray is the person who drew the Foreign Office attention to the fact that they were receiving information which had been basically gained in the Tashkent torture chambers. The Foreign Office had a view of complicity, which was that they said, if we aren't the people who actually do the torturing, there is no moral obligation upon us to ask where this information come from. So they knew bloody well that they were getting information by torture. You can then have a legal argument about whether by receiving that information, you are or are not complicit. But I'm keeping the argument to what is known. And it's a shocking enough story without allegations which can't be proved.
One of the fascinating things about the play is that he's sleazy, he's arrogant. In Hollywood, whistleblowers tend to be quite saintly people.
That's right. You know, I think that probably that's why Michael Winterbottom wanted to do it as a farce, because he said, let's get somebody who is sort of nakedly ridiculous to play this part. I felt that was the wrong way to go, and I thought a great actor, and I do think David Tennant is a great actor, could give you both things. In other words, he could give you the moral seriousness of the character, but he could also give you the wild side, which undoubtedly is part of Craig.
To what extent have you changed it from the screenplay? Because there's a lot of voiceover narration in this, which in your film scripts you have quite often shied away from.
Oh, definitely. One of the things I did was talk to a lot of people around the story, and one of them was his wife, Fiona. And so I've included a lot of what Fiona told me, which is not in the book, which was the point of view of someone who was basically sympathetic to what Craig wanted to do, which was alert the foreign secretary to the fact that he might be breaking international law, but who thought that he was tactically very stupid and rather exhibitionist in the way he went about it. That said, what I most admire about Craig is that he's been willing to pay the price for his principle. He adored being a diplomat, and he will never go back to his job in the Foreign Office. And he really has, like many whistleblowers, really paid the price.
To what extent did you consult him about what you were doing?
Not very much. I read an earlier draft of the book, which was even wilder and more scabrous. It was hilarious. I mean, it was Rabelaisian. It certainly was not like any diplomatic memoir. But having said that, I really have written something closer to my own version of these events. I went to Tashkent. I met the people who worked for him. It is strongly adapted.
It is wild stuff, as you suggest. At one point, he marries a pole dancer who's been working as an interpreter for him, and people think you've made this up, but that did really happen.
Yeah, and Nadira is now living happily. She has a child. She lives with Crane, and his life is now with his Uzbek girlfriend.
The BBC is known to be very nervous about dramatisations of living people, and there have been many problems over this over the years. There are certain rules. You're supposed to have permission, I think, in most cases, if you dramatise a living person. Did any of this affect you?
Not in the slightest. I think BBC Radio is just exemplary. I mean, it reminds me of what BBC television used to be like in the good days. It's moved at the speed of light. Obviously, the subject of British complicity and torture is hotly topical at the moment. And wow, it's going out a week after the principal evidence in the Chilcot inquiry. And I can't think of any medium that moves as fast as radio can move.
We have the Foreign Secretary, it's Jack Straw, isn't it, is actually dramatised in this. There were no BBC nerves over that.
I don't detect any nerves at all from the BBC. I have been incredibly cooperative myself. In other words, my days in which I used to fight the BBC are long over.
So in the old days, you wrote a famous essay on this. You used to actually trade expletives in pubs for your television plays.
Well, television used to be a bartering job where you literally would sit down and say, I'll have two B words for an S word. And there would simply be a trading session in the pub. But those days are gone, I think.
Finally, there have been cases of radio plays becoming movies. I think Man for All Seasons was originally a radio play, and one of Lee Hall's also became a movie. So you never know, you might get an offer to make a movie of this now.
Yeah, I've had three offers already to make it a stage play since I wrote it as a radio play, but I'm just going to wait and see how people like it on Saturday.
David Hare, Murder in Samarkand is on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. here on BBC Radio 4, where this is Front Row.